Okay, so feel free to ask questions as we go. So we put online already an audio recording of last lecture, and I think Ms. Goshen got a recording today and on Thursday as well. There's someone with an excuse, with a reasonably, a pretty good excuse for an absence on Thursday. So we'll record today and Thursday. We started in lecture one slides. We ended up with a MATLAB introduction in lecture 13 slides, the lecture 13 slide, which I'll start with today. Now, this is in PowerPoint, so if you got the PowerPoint files are on Canvas under lectures, general, right below general information on the homepage, and it's also on my website for the class, so either way to get to it. Now, I did make one change to these slides since last time because when I went through it, there was one place I did not have the MATLAB code. I added the MATLAB code to it, and that was in the stem plot for temperature. There it is. So on slide 9, I added the MATLAB code, even though it's a bit lengthy, to generate the stem plot on the upper left for temperature each day in September 2016 here in Austin, Texas. Okay, so that's the MATLAB code, and we'll talk more about that in a second. All right, so in lecture slide 13, where we left off last time. So on this slide, did a few things, right? MATLAB's been around a long time, so it's a lot of code out there that's available, not just in the MathWorks, which is the company that makes MATLAB, in their repository, but in the internet. There's so much code out there. So if you are looking for something, now if you turn in someone else's code for the homework, don't do that. But if you're looking, turn your own code in. But if you're looking for examples of what's out there, so much code out there. It's quite amazing, just the number of years it's been around. So a lot of publications that happen in technical literature come usually the MATLAB code, or not always, probably many times the MATLAB code is also published with the book or with the reference or whatever. So in this case, there's a lot of MATLAB code for the Signal Processing First book on the website for the book, right, dsbfirst.gatech.edu for Georgia Tech. So a few things just to get started with this language. We kind of left off here, so you can define scalar variables. Just say, you know, variables equal to that. That's pretty standard stuff for a programming language. MATLAB, by default, does represent data as a matrix, even a scalar, although it has a special flag for a scalar. But it's internally, it's represented as a one-by-one matrix, which seems maybe a little strange. So everything is sort of, by default, you can change the data type if you need to, but by default, just think things are matrices here, or vector is a special case, a scalar is a vector, is a special case. Last time we mentioned this structure, which is to generate a vector of values, in this case of time values that we want to take of our signal. And the separation is usually pretty small. We like to get a pretty good tracking of the amplitude over time. And we'll talk about how to choose this in a bit, but there's a sampling theorem out there that says that we want to pick the sampling rate, FS, to be at least greater than twice the maximum frequency of the signal we care about. We'll talk about more about that sampling theorem later. But this is a case where I've chosen the sampling rate, FS, to be much greater than 2 times the frequency of the cosine. And that frequency of the cosine, F naught, is 440 hertz. So we've chosen a much higher sampling rate than that. So we're going to get really small time steps for our sampling time, capital T of S. Okay, so we generate a vector of time values, little t, and this notation of t is start, increment, and end. And again, the syntax here of 1:0.5:3, we covered this last time, means generate a vector that starts at 1, ends at 3, and I increase the value starting with 1 by increments of 0.5. So I get 1.5, sorry, 1.5, 2, 2.5, and 3, and I stop. So these vectors can be as long or as short as you need them to be. And you kind of get a sense that, you know, if I do everything as in a vector form, I probably don't need for loops, and you'd be right. Go ahead.
I've seen it too, where it's just the start and the end. Do you just assume that it's steps one? Then?
That's correct. So if there's no increment given, it defaults to one. So if you say, and that was earlier, there is an example earlier in the slides that did this. So I'll go back to that. Good time to go back and look at code I've already talked about. So this is on slide 10. So 1-10, and this was a case where we flipped a fair coin 10 times to be either heads or tails. We let one be a head and minus one be a tail, and we get 10 values. And so here, if you look at this, the flip number was 1:10, which means I generated a vector of values 1, and 2, 3, 4, all the way to 10. So if you use this vector notation, you really won't need for loops very often. It's pretty rare. Okay. It also means it's pretty efficiently run. The code runs pretty efficiently if you keep your data in vector or matrix form. MATLAB is meant to do that really fast. Let's get back to slide 13. So back on slide 13. Okay, so what I've set up a frequency f0 for 40 hertz, a sampling rate that's much greater than twice that, so I can track the signal varying in time. And I have a sampling time, which is just 1 over the sampling rate. So the sampling rate's in hertz, the sampling time is in seconds. All right, so the samples in time that I want to take start at 0 and go up to 4 divided by f0. You'll notice the comment here, and so the comment character in MATLAB is the percent character, and in this comment it says generate 4 samples of time samples, 4 periods of time samples. So again, if f0 is my frequency of my sinusoid, it means that the fundamental period, the shortest possible period, is just 1 over that frequency. We looked at that last lecture, and it's things that you've seen probably before in circuit theory and other classes. So this is 4 divided by f0, and 1 over f0 is just the period in seconds. So I'm asking to plot 4 periods of the cosine, and I'm taking small steps in the time domain by capital TS. Next line here, it says apply the cosine to compute all the amplitude values at these instances of time, little t, that I'm taking. So this is a little bit, the formula may look straightforward, but there is an interesting interpretation. So the formula is probably not too different than you might type out in another programming language, even C, right? So I have the cosine of 2 times pi times f0 times t, and everything would be normal if t were a scalar, but t is a vector. When you place a vector into an argument, what will come out is this cosine will be applied to every element of the vector in its argument, one at a time. So I will get a cosine where the arguments of vector will give me another vector whose amplitude values are simply the cosine at the different values of the argument for that cosine. So the length of x is the same length as the length of little t. So little x is the same length as little t. And then the last piece of code on this slide is to plot what I've done. So I've got it, and you can tell MATLAB the horizontal axis is going to be little t, vector of values, and the vertical axis will be x by amplitude values. And so that plot shows up in the upper right part of the slide. Okay, so there's your result. Okay, so I'll do ahead now. I'm going to copy and paste this into MATLAB just to see how things work or don't work. Should work. So I can just copy. Now, here's MATLAB. So MATLAB has got a few things to it. The default user interface has a few things. The first is in the lower right, where it says academic license, this is where you can type commands. And it will interpret what you type and give you an answer back. Or if you put the semicolon at the end of the line, it will suppress telling you what the answer is. So you can type in something as simple as, 1 plus 1, and it gives you an answer back. So there's a variable, a global variable called ANS that stores the last value you've computed. I can say 2 times pi. That's simple enough. So there's some built-in global constants, pi being one of them. Okay. Now I can also keep doing this, or I can use another window, which is up in this upper part of the MATLAB command line, or command window, or user interface, and I can generate and put a bunch of commands by hitting the plus sign into a script, and I can run it as a script. So it's totally, either way. What I'm going to do right now is copy and paste the code from the PowerPoint file directly into the command window, not make it a script. Okay, so things are working right. There you go. So I get my cosine in a plot window, which is figure 1. Okay, and I can make the window as big or as small as I want. Okay, it's nice. This should be 4 periods of a cosine at frequency 440 hertz. It's like 4 periods of a cosine to me. Now, a few things you can do once you have the figure window open. I can certainly, a couple things. One is I can, there are a bunch of tools in the upper window here. There's a magnifying glass icon, for example. So what I can do by clicking the magnifying glass icon is to zoom into a part of the graph. So I can zoom in and inspect what I need. Control Z gets me out, undo. I can save this, which you'll need when you do, I suppose, homework. If you want to put it into a Word file or something else, or PowerPoint presentation, as the case may be. You can, under File menu, you can save as. You can save the figure as and choose a variety of formats to make that happen. So you can choose, I use portable network graphics, PNG, but you can pick whatever format you like to save it in and pull it into your whatever, some of the document. Okay, so the tune-up for today will be this code, and we're going to add 2 lines to it. Just to make sure things are working. Okay, so here's the plot command. And what I showed, this plot command takes the samples that we have and connects the dots to give you a smooth, what hopefully looks like a smooth fit. So it looks like a continuous time plot, even though we've sampled it. So that's one plot option. All right, so now we're going to slide 14. So another plot option we'll use a lot as well, which is the stem plot. This is the discrete time plot. Okay, so stem x. Now notice I didn't give I only gave one variable, so this would by default be the vertical axis. So here I have a stem plot, and now I'm seeing those samples. And each sample gets a stem. And you still should see 4 periods of the cosine. So let's try that in the MATLAB window. Now, if you don't do anything, MATLAB will just happily plot whatever you want on top of your last figure window. Okay, so we'll do that for now. So stem, and now where did the window go? Okay, so under window, under MATLAB menu, you can find the figure if it's not, visible. So all the figures you generate are kept track of in the MATLAB window menu. Okay, so here's the stem plot for this cosine, 440 hertz, sampled at 8,000 hertz. Remember, it's the same signal, we're looking at it 2 different ways. Now, if you want to generate, 2 different figures, I don't have that on the slides, but you can simply type in the command figure, and that will generate a new figure window. So if I type in figure, I get a new window, and now this is why I close figure 1. So if I do figure again, and the up arrow will repeat the previous command. There's figure 2. So you can keep opening up, figure after figure if you want. to get back to the stem. Okay, so they're stem plotting it. Okay, now, let's talk about getting this out to a sound card. Now, what I show on this, again, on this slide is a repeat the code on the lower left. We're in slide 14. Lower left of the slide is the same code we had before, sort of. Okay, I made a couple of minor changes. What change did I make? There's more than one. What change do you see?
Sampling rate.
Okay, so now if I'm going to play it over through a sound card, I've got to pick a sampling rate that's supported by the sound card. So for a sound card, it will support a variety of typically standard audio rates, but each sound card supports its own rates. So you're going to have to either guess and hope, or check, or look up the technical specs. But 8,000 hertz, as I mentioned, is a common sampling rate from the old telephones we used to plug into the walls in our houses, right? And then cell phones later. Okay, so when second generation cell phones came out, and even 3G did this too, the sampling rate was 8,000 when you would speak on the phone, convert it to a digital stream, and transmit it out to the base station. So the transmission of voice to a base station was both in discrete time and also compressed. Okay, so now what else did I change?
Playtime.
So how long is the playtime?
3 seconds.
3 seconds, right? Why not? The other one would have been rather short. So let's do at least long enough to hear it. So now this is going to be a lot longer vectors. Right? So the vector little t is going to be 3 seconds. And the sampling time is now, I have how many samples per second do I have? The number's there. You just have to figure out which number it is.
8,000.
So it's 8,000. The sampling rate, FS, means how many samples per second am I going to be taking of my waveform. Okay, so 8,000 is a standard rate, but there are other standard rates. So CD audio has what sampling rate?
44100.
So 44,100. So if for some reason 8,000 doesn't work, and it didn't for me if you remember last lecture, 44,100 works. Should work. If that doesn't work, 48,000, 96,000. So a number of these standard audio rates that you can try. There are a couple different sound commands. There's sound, and there's sound scaled. And the difference is that sound will just play the values that you give it. And if it happens to be out of range, it will clip. Which means, so what does that mean? So the sound command will only play values of the vector that are between -1 and 1 inclusive. So if you have values of like 2, it's going to clip at the 1. It won't go above 1 or below -1. So you can get some artifacts in your audio. The sound scale, the sound SC, will scale your whole signal to fit it into the range of -1 to 1 inclusive. So you won't get this clipping happening. Okay. Now in our case it's a beautiful sinusoid. The amplitudes are already between -1 and 1, so it really doesn't matter which one I use. I should hear the same thing. Okay. So let's try this out, and if the sampling rate doesn't work, we'll just try one that does. Okay, so again, I'm copying and pasting from the PowerPoint slide. Check the volume ahead of time, so let me get it. I have no idea what that is. That is not from my lab. That's from my lab. It's okay. You can go ahead and play it yourself. Let's hear it. There's only one note, so it shouldn't be discordant. This is 4-4, this is a note in the Western scale, this is A. Good, this is a good sign. Okay, so let's go. All right, let's go straight to the, that's for next video. All right, so let's go for the tune-up here. So let's, MATLAB. And so it's the same code you had that I just had up. It's exactly the code that you just had from slide 14. So slide 1-14. What I'd like you to do, first of all, is you just, well, you already played it, so for those who didn't play, now this is where headphones might come in handy, although I like the notes pleasant for me, but it's up to you, maybe you'll lower the volume a little bit. So part A here, I want you to take exactly the code you just did and make sure it works for you in MATLAB. So run MATLAB and try to copy and paste from slide 1-14 into MATLAB. And work individually. And then if Ms. Cody, you can walk around and help folks. So the first step in part A is to just copy and paste that code from lecture slide 1-14 to play the sound. The next step is to plot it, right, using the plot command. We already talked about that, so we just have two arguments for the plot command. If you ever get stuck in MATLAB, you can always type in health and the function name. It has both a command line help and a web-based help, two different options. So if you're not sure, you can go to MATLAB and do a help plot, for example. And it's a long answer, as these things happen. But if you go to the very top, you've already seen plot in action a little bit. But there it is. So plot has two arguments. Or you can do it with one argument, we'll assume it's just the vertical axis. So you can do the horizontal axis combo vertical axis. So in our case, time and amplitude. Okay. So how are we doing on? So we'll kind of go through the room. We have issues. Yeah, so the plot's going to look like a solid rectangle, I guess, right? Because you have a lot of points.
Oh.
Right? You've got 8,000 samples per second times 3 seconds. So you're plotting 24,000 samples in a very small space. So it's going to look really solid. Okay, or something. It's going to look not quite what you expected. What you got? You're good? Sounds like it works. Now you just got to plot. Give me a plot command. And the plot command was on slide 1-13, so it isn't far away. If you don't remember this, isn't it? Then there's always help.
Oh, they changed it.
the first time or it's one of the first times, you're not going to have the look. This script window would not be open for you. Sorry, I forgot about this. But if you don't need it open, but if you want it to be open under new, you can say new script. And you'll get the script window. And if you don't need it, you can close it with the X over here. Okay, then it looks like, how's B looking? Anyone? How's B? Alright, so the key with part B is you gotta, so in this first one, I'm very, very flexible on how I'm gonna grade this. So this first one, you just have to have a plot command, and I notice natural. A lot of folks use the same syntax as the sound command, but that's not gonna really give you what you expect. So I want to make sure that in the plot command, it's two arguments, time and amplitude values. And it'll be a solid rectangle of blue or some other color, whatever you have set up. Okay. And that's the right answer, even though it looks pretty useful. Now you can always zoom in on that blob of blue. If you zoom in enough, you'll start seeing the sinusoidal shape. Again, using the magnifying glass icon to zoom in. Okay. Part C. I want you to title the plot. And there's a command called title in MATLAB. It takes a string. What I want you to do is give me your name as the title of the plot. Now, the trick in MATLAB is, okay, what's the character for string? It could be double quote, it could be single quote, it could be, okay, so it's single quote in MATLAB. And it's the forward single quote, not the backward single quote. And you'll know, because if you use the wrong character,
I double quoted it, it works.
MATLAB will let you know you used the wrong character. So if I say title me, here, double quotes, me, yeah, okay. It goes, I don't think so. So give me single quotes in your name. First name's enough. You're going to turn it on the canvas. I know you are. First name is enough. Okay.
Yeah. I think the double quotes works in the 2017.
Oh, I'm using 2015. Okay, well, never mind. I didn't know that.
Awesome. I think it just got updated.
So there's my stem plot with me on the I go Okay, the last step is, so let's get through part C, because I've got a deadline here at 1:15 to get this stuff into Canvas. We're good, got 8 minutes. Okay, so that's it. So just take those, the lines of code that we already had, add the two lines, which is the plot command and the title command. Just take that, copy and paste it into your Canvas for tune-up Tuesday number one. So copy it from MATLAB, copy it from Notepad, whatever. Now, from MATLAB's a little bit. So you can copy this from the PowerPoint file, take it to Notepad or whatever, and then just copy and paste from MATLAB. Now, MATLAB, this is where the script window can be helpful when you're developing code in the script window. Then you can either run it from the script window or copy and paste from the script window to the command line. That does make it a little bit easier to copy and paste to submit. Okay, so that's all it is. So it's the code from slide 1-14 plus the right syntax on the plot command plus the title. Just copy and paste that into Canvas. So it makes it easier. So pretty much, so is anyone having trouble getting to Canvas? The logistics thing. Anyone? Wi-Fi's not?
Yeah, my Wi-Fi.
Two or something. All right. So that. That one's beyond my control, sadly. Is Canvas okay for you? Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah,
copy and paste. To note one, it should accept your text.
Copy and paste text for 10.1. Under assignments, and then under tune-up one. Anything else? Anyone else? Anyone else not able to submit?
I'll show your official.
Yep, you're good. All right, so we'll, Ms. Gosch, could you just kind of mark, just get their name down so we don't have to stay. So, go ahead and just get their name, just completing the work. Okay, so this style of thinking about a problem in terms of vectors and matrices is a very common one. This is true in data science, data mining, machine learning, signal processing, comm, et cetera. So it's very much a common way of looking at things. Now, we're happy doing this in MATLAB, but the same approach would happen in Python if you're going to do machine learning work. And there's a lot of translators between MATLAB and Python, Python and MATLAB. So there's a pretty recent surge in the use of Python in certain application spaces, such as machine learning. So, and Python has added a lot of extensions to mimic MATLAB functions. And MATLAB is a incumbent, you know, 30-year incumbent, so it's been around a long time. So it's nice to be able to go between MATLAB and Python somewhat easily. So it just depends. But the thinking here is the same. So that kind of ends lecture slide 1-14. That's good. This is, so far we've talked a little bit about signals. I want to move on to systems. Again, we're now in chapter 2 of the book, section 4. Now we'll go back to a little bit in the first chapter to talk about systems. Now, again, system's a loaded word. One person's device is another person's system. System could be any level of abstraction. So for us, it's, at least from a mathematical viewpoint, a system for us is going to take a signal as the input and produce another signal. Now it could take two signals in and produce one signal out. But just for simplicity, right now, one signal in, one signal out. It can happen in continuous time. Let's show on the right, x of t becomes y of t. It can happen in discrete time. X of n becomes y of n. And if it's in MATLAB or some Python or whatever the computer language is, x is a vector of values, goes into some operation, and out comes another vector of values, y. Here's some very simple examples, but very powerful ones in practice. So the first one here in slide 1-15, output y of t is simply half of the current input value, x of t, and half of the input value, when? What does t1 s1 mean? T is in seconds. What's minus 1? Previous second. Right, so it's just plugging in value. Let little t be 1. So y of 1 is equal to half of x of 1 plus half of x of 0. So it's whatever the input x was 1 second ago. Okay, it doesn't seem like very impressive, but it turns out this is a filter and it can do some amazing things in communications and audio processing. The next one also looks pretty simple. Y of t is x squared of t. Whatever the input is at time t, I square it. I square that value. You get a new value. Doesn't look all that impressive. Turns out to be pretty useful. We'll talk about why this is set. Now, the discrete time version of this, of both systems, so I have y of n is half of the current input value plus 1/2 of the input n minus 1. So remember, n is not in seconds anymore. Does it have any units at all? I mean, you could say, well, n is a sample index, but it doesn't have any physical units like seconds. We've abstracted that away. So x of n minus 1 is the previous input sample. So I think x is a vector of values. X of n is the current value in the vector of values. And x of n minus 1 is the previous value in that vector. Now, the other squaring block here, that may be a little bit more clear in discrete time. Just whatever the current input value is, I square it. I square that to get y. So I square x of n to get y of n for each sample index little n. Okay, now it turns out the squaring block is incredibly useful, simple as it looks. It is useful in audio, and I forgot the other, it's true in image too. So it's useful in audio image processing and communication system. Supporting bill. The other system is a very simple filter, easy to compute. In discrete time, how many multiplications do I need to implement y of n equals 1 half x of n plus 1 half x of n minus 1? How many multiplications do I need? Two. How many additions? One. Very simple to compute. Very simple in the C programming language to implement. And it turns out this is an averaging filter. We'll talk more about this when we hit chapter 5 in the book. Do a lot of this kind of thing. So we'll do a lot more later. But this is a very simple moving average filter. It can smooth out data and remove noise. Okay, so let me talk a little more about the squaring block. This is really amazingly useful. So one thing it's useful for, and I'm on slide 1-16, is if my input signal x of t were AM radio transmission. So maybe you don't listen to AM radio much anymore. Maybe you do. I don't know. Anyone listen to anything on AM these days? AM radio? Maybe on the web. So listen to The Zone for UT Sports, maybe. That's 1300 kilohertz. So to decode an AM radio signal, passing it through a squaring block and applying a low-pass filter, I can extract the audio portion from that transmission. Even though the transmission is electromagnetic waves, I can recover the audio portion just from doing a squaring block and a low-pass filter. Pretty amazing. When you display an image on a screen, laptop, desktop, smartphone, the pixel amplitude goes through a nonlinear transformation. It's something, it's not quite to the square, but it's to the 2.2 power. So what you see on the screen is not exactly the pixel value of the image. You're seeing it through this nonlinearity. So you can, of course, compensate for that, which you can take it to the 1/√, basically, or the equivalent before you display it to correct for this. It's called gamma correction. You can also increase a musical note on the Western scale by squaring it. And we haven't gone to that yet, but 440 hertz is an A. The A at octave higher is what frequency, for those who might know? 880, doubles. So we're going to see about the squaring block. If the cosine is the input of a single frequency, we get cosine squared, and there's a trig formula for that. What comes out is a frequency of twice the input frequency, and also a constant offset. And that's nice about the Western music scale, is that the note in the next octave is double the frequency. So here's an example. So I put in an A note at 440, make that x of t, put that through a squaring block, so I get cosine of 2 pi 440 times t for my input signal x of t. The output is the square of that. And again, I can use the trig formula for cosine squared. Again, it's open book, open note test. I don't memorize this stuff either. Look it up or rederive it. Lots of ways you can rederive it. So the doubling, the cosine squared of theta is 1 half times the quantity 1 plus cosine of 2 theta. What that means is that whatever is in the argument for the cosine now has doubled in value. And another way to interpret this is the frequency has doubled to 880. So again, a very simple method. Now the next question is, well, okay, if I do this in MATLAB code, I'll hear the 880. If I do this, I implement this, I'll hear the, I put it as an input for 40 hertz into my squaring block, I'll hear 880 out. But I also have a DC term, a constant value. And we haven't interpreted what that is yet in frequency. But maybe you know it from other classes. What is the frequency content of a constant? Zero. It's a DC component. Can you hear zero frequency? It's a range of normal hearing on the low end, down to about 20 hertz. Below 20, not for normal hearing. Okay, so you don't hear this. So if you play this out, provided there's no clipping, you won't hear the DC term. Okay, so nice. We get what we need. So this is a nice audio effect. So if we plot this in MATLAB code, so I have two plots here. In blue, I have the cosine of 440 hertz. And the other color here, I have the square of that. And what you'll notice is in the squared, the cosine squared, what's happened to the period versus 440? It's halved. So if the period is halved for a cosine, what happens to the frequency? It doubles. That's right, it doubles. Okay. So now what I have is I have the effect here is I have a cosine, now at twice the frequency, and you also notice there's a DC offset. It's no longer, the squared version is between 0 and 1 and closer, it's no longer minus 1 and 1. So now I have a DC offset of a half. And we can see it here in the plot. And the MATLAB code is here. All right, so. Now, a couple things in the MATLAB code. What you see here is should be somewhat familiar to what we just did. And so in the MATLAB code here in slide 1-16, the MATLAB code should look similar to what we just did for the tune-up, right? All the way to here, right? So the first six lines are what we've already seen. And then we're going to play it out, which we've seen as well, slide 1-14. Now I'm going to put a pause in here so that I wait before I start the next. What happens is the sound command just sends the data X to the sound card. And then MATLAB says, okay, what do we do next? So if I don't put the pause in here, these two tones will be playing at the same time. So I put a pause in there equal to the maximum amount of time that I'm going to play out the first clip, which is 3 seconds, and just add another second just to give a little pause in there. So that and the pause command is something we haven't talked about until now. Now, the next one we haven't talked about is a little bit strange in MATLAB. Remember, MATLAB is thinking in terms of vectors. So if I want to take every value of my signal x, which is a vector, and I want to square each element, there is a thing called point. So point-wise, which means element by element or point by point, I'm going to square each element of x to get a new vector. So y is going to have the same number of entries as x. Right, and the values of y will simply be, so y of the first value of y is the first value of x squared. Second value of y is the second value of x squared, and so forth. And then I can play that out as sin. Someone's already ahead of me. So the 880 will sound higher in frequency than the 440. A higher tone, higher note. So that takes us to the end of lecture one slide. So there's one more slide in here, which I'll point out. So because I occasionally do use, I'll sign the printed version. So occasionally I do use slides from the DSP First book, or I use a figure, and I'll put the copyright notice in there when I do, if it's a slide that is based on material in the book or the website. And then this is the license from the authors for a signal processing course. So I'll include this at the end of each lecture slide deck. to, again, lecture schedule for the semester, so we've completed now lecture slides for lecture one, and now we'll do lecture two slides. So reminder, homework one is due Friday at 12:30 on Canvas. It's a PDF file, one PDF file upload. And there's also Expo coming up in three different flavors. You're welcome to go to all three. You just need a UT ID, photo ID to get in. Bring a resume, of course, my friends, even though they'll ask you to submit one electronically, it's okay. So you got several things here. But please come to class. We'd love to have you here, and then Expo will love to have you. Okay, so you've got three different options. And maybe you know all three, maybe you don't. So every semester there's another Expo. Right. And shuttles will run to the Irwin Center to make it easier to get there. I've already got lecture two slides loaded, so we'll just go with that. So, oh, any questions? I'm coming, I guess, to the end of lecture one slides. Any questions looking back on lecture one material? So we did logistics, introducing signals and systems. Lots of sinusoids. There'll be a lot more sinusoids. I hope you like sinusoids because the whole class will be sinusoids all the way till the end of one form or another. It's a nice trick to decompose complicated signals into sinusoids and do the analysis on the individual sinusoidal components. It's a nice divide and conquer approach for analysis. Okay. Again, so kind of where we're headed in the lecture schedule. So we threw midterm one. It's a lot of sinusoids and frequency interpretation of sinusoids of all kinds of flavors and forms. Including sampling aliasing and some interesting things to come called time frequency spectrum. So that'll be coming up. All right. So lecture two slides, periodic signal. Again, this will be on the Canvas site and also my website, either place. You know, again, some of this stuff will be reviewed in pieces, but that's fine. And some of it will not, and that's also fine. So we're hoping to kind of fill in whatever. And also some, you know, circuit theory was at least on the other side of last summer, right? So it's good to review some of these things too. Okay, so periodicity, which you've already kind of redefined, or defined in lecture slides for lecture one, just to make sure. Period means if I shift a signal by capital T seconds, I get back the same signal. The smallest positive period is the fundamental period. We'll need this for the Fourier series, and again, you would have seen Fourier series most likely in differential equations. If not, that's also fine. We'll do it here. Now, lots of other periods are possible, 2 times capital T, 3 times. These are all other ways. So if I shift the cosine by 2 pi or 4 pi or 6 pi, I get back the same cosine. Our signal, again, this may be reviewed. Our signal here, got a frequency, got a phase, and an amplitude. Now here the amplitude is 1, frequency up naught, phase is p. We already know that the fundamental period is just 1 over the frequency f naught. And the way we can get there is we know that the cosine is periodic with period 2 pi. So I take cosine of x plus 2 pi, get back cosine of x. How does that work for us in a signal? Well, I can take cosine of 2 pi, just as I have here, 2 pi f naught t plus phi, and replace little t with t plus capital T and see what happens. So I do that, so 2 pi f naught, replace little t with little t plus, in this case, capital T naught, plus phi, distribute the multiplication across the addition, and now 3 terms, 2 pi f naught t plus 2 pi f naught capital T naught plus phi. The nice thing is we know that in order for this term, 2 pi times f naught times capital T naught to be a multiple of 2 pi, it means that F naught and T naught have to be equal to 1 or some integer. Any integer is fine. But if I want the fundamental period, I want this to be 1. The smallest positive value for T naught. So that just gives us back T naught is equal to 1 over F naught. And you'll need this for in homework problem 1. 1.1. Okay, so some ways to plot this. I have down here on the, So I've taken the, now I've added an amplitude here. So I have 5 times, again, slide 2-2, 5 times cosine 2 pi f times t, phi is 0. And I'm plotting over time from minus 10 milliseconds to 20 milliseconds. F naught is 0. So if you plug in F naught is 0, the argument for cosine is always 0. That means I get a constant value, no matter what time little t I'm talking about. So it's hard to see here, but look a little closely. There is a line here at 5. So it's just a constant value with respect to time. So this corresponds to 0 frequency. It's a constant value in time, 0 value in frequency. Let F naught be 100 hertz, so now we'll get oscillations. And I let F naught equals 200 hertz, twice as many oscillations in the same period of time. So in all 3 plots, the horizontal axis is the same range of values, same interval of values. And again, when you listen to this, 100 hertz, that's going to sound pretty low in frequency. All right, let's talk about the connection between time shift and phase shift. So now we're moving along to chapter 2 in the book. And I'm going to use a pretty fundamental signal to show this. And it's, and again, and the MATLAB code for this is here. So it's going to be a unit area rectangular pulse. This is an incredibly useful signal. It doesn't look like much. Have you used this signal before in modeling a physical action in a previous class? What did you use it for?
Like the clock and 306.
Right, so it's, and this would be?
Voltage on or off.
On or off.
Logic 1 is
off. Absolutely, on and off. So you can say logic 1 is on, logic 0 is off. And then you have to map what logic 1 is to a voltage. 5 volts, 3.3 volts, whatever it is. Exactly. Now, for a clock, we would also, we periodically repeat this rectangular pulse. So it's a good way of modeling something. Now, here we're not periodically repeating. Not yet. That's coming in the later slides. But for now, it's just one rectangular pulse. So it's off, on at time of minus 1/2 seconds, stays on for a second, and then turns off. So it's a way of modeling something that was off, then on, then off. Could be a light switch. Could be you hit your brakes. Hold it, let them go. Hopefully let them go. Okay. Mathematically, it gets a little bit cumbersome to write. This is a signal that has different pieces to it. There's an off, there's an on, there's an off. That makes sense. So we can say, well, it's on when the absolute value of time is less than 1/2, so between minus 1/2 and half. There's a bit of a strangeness at the boundary points when I turn from off to on and on to off. Different ways of defining that. Here I'm just using half. And then 0 would be the off portion. So this is when either time is greater than 1/2 or time is less than 1/2. And there's a MATLAB command for this, rect pulse. Okay, so if I take this rectangular pulse and I delay it by 1 second, it shifts to the right. And a way to kind of sanity check this, just plug in some values for time. Go ahead.
Why is t minus 1/2?
Oh, I slid it. Okay, so I slid. So by now the horizontal axis is in marks of 1/2 second. That's why. So Now, I can just plug in some values and just do a sanity check to make sure I shift to the right direction. Right, so if I plug in little t of 1, I should get the rec of 0, which puts you right there. So it looks like I did the right thing. And so I figure out, maybe take a value of 3/4 and 5/4, make sure things are getting back to the original rectangular plus correctly. Nice sanity check. Now I can shift the other direction. There's a MATLAB code for this. I can shift the other direction. Right here I do t of plus 1/2. Now I'm going to shift to the left by 1/2 seconds. Good.
So when the absolute value of t is 1/2, the rectangular value is 1/2. But that's not shown with the...
Right, so the way I plotted this, it did not... It's hard to see what happens at 1/2. Now, if you plot this in MATLAB, now the other question is that what we use in mathematical notation, you want to sanity check that to make sure MATLAB has the same definition. Sometimes there can be, there's more than one way to define what happens at these points of discontinuity at minus 1/2 and 1/2. So in MATLAB, so if you're going to actually implement this, now you can say, so here is the shifted to the right by 1 second. And you'll notice something really strange here in MATLAB. You'll notice that, well, it didn't exactly suddenly shoot from 0 to 1 at t equal 1/2. Right, so this is depends on how many samples per second I take. And where those where I take those samples as to what I get. And if you do a help on rec pulse, you get it should tell you that at 1/2 minus 1/2, so it's doing something different. It's not half minus 1/2, it's 1. So just good to double check these things. Sometimes it matters. Sometimes it doesn't, what happens at a point. We'll see more about this issue when we talk about the unit step function and what we do with the origin. So that's coming a little bit later. So there's flexibility on what you do here. So now that's a time shift, right? That's shifting which direction am I going, left or right, when I shift. Phase shift is a consequence of time shift. And this is incredibly important. So phase shift is used in all kinds of applications. It's used in sonar and radar to find targets and other identifying objects in the environment. So if I'm a submarine, I want to know what's out there, you know, rocks, terrain, whales, whatever I'm looking for, it could be mines, I kind of want to know. And so it turns out they use time shift or equivalently phase shift to listen for echoes when they send out pings to determine what's out there. Very useful stuff. Something did not get quite through there on my PowerPoint. Okay, so if we talk about sinusoidal signals, slide 2-4, and I have the first equation should have been x of t with a closed parenthesis. All right, so I have a standard cosine, frequency f naught. If I shift it by t1, and I just plug it into the formula, so I let little t be t minus t1, t sub 1, so I get a times cosine 2 pi f naught. So again, x of t is cosine 2 pi f naught t. X of t minus t1, cosine 2 pi f naught. Plug in t minus t1. Distribute the multiplication across the subtraction. So I get two terms, 2 pi f naught t. minus 2 pi f naught t1. So this term, 2 pi f naught t1, is just a constant. And it's a constant phase shift. This is also on homework one. Now, the initial interpretation of the phase shift is that, you know, if I have a positive value of T1, positive time shift, T1, I get a negative phase shift. If I get a negative time shift, then I get a positive phase shift. But see, that's what it looks like initially. And we're on the right track. But there's one more piece. What's the missing piece? What happens to phase shifts with cosines?
Two pi.
2 pi, right? So if I shift by 2 pi, I'm back to where I started. So if the phase shift is enough, I might get back to where I started. Okay, so there's a 2 pi periodicity in here. There's some ambiguity. If that phase shift is starting to get to 2 pi or more, I get repetition. That phase shift is now sort of modulo 2 pi, for what it really is. I get ambiguity in multiples of 2 pi. So we're at 144. I don't see how to do the next slide in 1 minute. So we'll, any questions before we break? I have office hours immediately following class. And I'll walk to my office from here, wait in the elevator, and get to my office, whatever.